Toledot. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Toledot. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the second day of the month of Kislev, 5770, on the general calendar, secular calendar, whatever you want to call it, November 19th. Just to review, although the Jewish year begins with the month of Tishrei and the holiday of Rosh Hashanah, which is roughly in September, the months are counted from Nisan, the month we came out of Egypt, the spring month, Chag HaAviv, that's month number one, which makes Kislev the ninth month of the year. What's interesting is that we are also in November. November means the ninth month. Even though November is the 11th month of the year, it used to be the ninth month, which is where it got its name. September, seventh month. October, eighth month. November, ninth month. December, D-E-C, is 10th month. And then January, February. Originally, the year began in the spring. March was the first month of the year. February was the last month of the year. And then sometime, perhaps in the 18th century, at least in England and the colonies, it was changed to the year beginning with January. The names of the month stayed. And November, which roughly corresponds to Kislev, is no longer the ninth month of the year, as is Kislev, but it still has the name ninth month. I thought that was interesting, and I wanted to share it with you. Psalm 130, Tehillim, Kuf Lamed. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tehyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor ya Adonai miya amod. Ki imcha hasalicha lema'an tivarei. Kiviti Adonai kiveta nafshi, velidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai hachesed, v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael, mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanatunim batzara uvashivya, Ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha, u'me'afela l'ora, u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'gala uvizman kariv, v'nomar amen. As you might have noticed, I changed the opening tune of the opener of the show to the theme of the Animaniacs, Warner Brothers characters, very cute and funny, and that's their theme music. I replaced the A-Team, and for a while we'll keep the Animaniacs. It is followed by that churning sound, which even though we got rid of the five pings, I left in the seven flips of the printer that prints Torah Tidbits. That's one way of connecting the hard copy of Torah Tidbits with the sound that it produces when it's being printed, transitioning it to Torah Tidbits audio. It's part of my warped way of doing things. That's followed by a little piece of E.G. Marshall and Radio Mystery Theater, and then the real theme of the show, Eitz Chaim Hi, talking about the Torah being a tree of life to those who cling to it. It's only the music, but the words are Eitz Chaim Hi Lama Chazikim Ba. And that really is the theme song, because whatever else we get a little sidetracked in, the main theme of this show is Torah, Torah. It happens every so often that I write a lead tidbit in the hard copy, which is sort of like an op-ed or an editorial, based on the weekly Torah reading, not necessarily always, but usually. And many times I'm not really satisfied that I have said my fill, pardon the expression, about the topic. I do have a little bit of a constraint in space. I reorganize the hard copy that all features are continuous, with the exception of the lead tidbit that begins on the front cover, often gets continued onto page 10, and when I need to go even further, from there to another page. And no matter how much room I devote for it, there's always more that I want to say. Sometimes I'm satisfied that the point was made. This week is an example of a presentation which I believe was incomplete in the hard copy. And sometimes I am able to give a shiur and expand upon it, and sometimes the listeners of the Torah Tidbits audio get to hear the rest of what's in my mind, or some of the rest what's on my mind. Now, it's going to be Torah, but it's also going to be what some people will call politics, which I refuse to acknowledge as politics, because I think it goes too much to the heart of life in Israel. And there is so much truth and Torah and even morality to denigrate it by labeling it politics, although some people will complain. I apologize now for having to introduce it like that, but let's now go from the beginning. I am not going to give exhaustive citations from the Torah. They are there, but I would rather just get across my point. Back in the beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha, or let's even go back a step to the very end of Parshat Noach, we are introduced to a person who then was called Avram, his wife Sarai. Later their names were changed to the more familiar Avraham, as in Avraham Avinu, Abraham our father, and Sarah, Sarah Imenu, Mother Sarah. Just introduced to them. At the beginning of Lech Lecha, we find their first major challenge. God says, Lech Lecha, go for yourself from your father's home, from your birthplace, from the land where you live, and go to the land I will show you. That land, then called the land of Canaan, later to be known as Eretz Yisrael, was where Avraham and Sarah were sent. When Avraham gets here, when they get here, and I say here because the show originates from Jerusalem, when they arrive, God appears to Avraham, and he says, I am going to give your descendants all of this land. Walk it, go to the north, to the south, look it all over, because all of this land will be for your descendants. This promise is repeated several times to Abraham, and if we are looking at it from the end, meaning our present-day perspective, the promises to Abraham and his descendants at the time he had no children, he subsequently had a son born to Hagar, Sarah's maidservant, Ishmael, and then a son from Sarah Imenu, Yitzchak Avinu, our father Isaac, and even subsequently, as recorded in the end of Parshat Chaye Sarah last week, we know that he had further number of children from Keturah, who our tradition says was Hagar, whom he took back after Sarah died. But the Torah makes it very clear, as God says to Avraham, Ki v'Yitzchak yikorei lecha zara. It will be Yitzchak and Yitzchak only who will be your spiritual heir, your actual heir to the land of Israel, to the land of Canaan. And even though, if you stop reading at the earlier promises, you can say the descendants of Ishmael, as well as the descendants of Isaac, were promised this land because it says to Avraham and your descendants, and if today's Arabs claim descent from Ishmael, that is a basis of their claim to this land. Yet the Torah is clear when it says, Ki v'Yitzchak yikarei lecha zara. And the promises are repeated to Isaac. They are not said to Ishmael. He is told that he will also sire a multitude of people and a great nation. But he was not given this land. Only Yitzchak was for his descendants. But at the beginning of this week's Torah portion of Toledot, we read of twins that are born to Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov and Esav. Esav, the father of Rome, Edom, and we'll say the spiritual progenitor of many nations, is also a descendant of Yitzchak. And if God says in the Torah, Ki v'Yitzchak yikarei lecha zara, perhaps people other than the people of Israel, the Jewish people, have a claim to the land of Israel. Comes the end of the Parsha this week, where we learn, after Rivka conspired, we'll say, with Yaakov to receive the bracha from Yitzchak rather than the intended Esav. There's a whole part of our literature that discusses, did Yitzchak know that he was being deceived? Did he really intend to give the blessing to Esav rather than Yaakov? Did he acknowledge that it belonged to Yaakov? Rivka was sure of it. Some actually say that it was told to her with a sense of prophecy, or at least divine insight, that she should go and engineer the receiving of the bracha for Yaakov. But you could put all of that aside, because that bracha, that blessing that we're talking about, is for wealth, prosperity, position in the world, not for the land of Israel. The blessing, the legacy that was given to Avraham from him to Yitzchak was passed on by Yitzchak to Yaakov, and only to Yaakov. It is known as Birkat Avraham, the blessing of Abraham. This is not through any kind of deceit or any kind of playing around. Here, Yitzhak gives the blessing of Avraham to his son Yaakov. And that blessing is defined in the text itself as the inheritance of the land of Israel. So if you take all of this together, the land is given and promised to Avraham for his generations to follow, forever, in perpetuity. That includes just Yitzchak, because that's what the Torah says. Yitzchak transmits it to Yaakov, not to Esav, to Yaakov, because that is what the Torah tells us. And therefore the promise is to Avraham, to Yitzchak, to Yaakov, and their descendants in perpetuity. That is the promise of the land. That is the basis of our claim. Yes, Joshua and the Jewish army conquered and settled it. Yes, it was re-established by Ezra. Yes, all of these things, including the United Nations vote to give a Jewish homeland here, but the basis, the core of our claim to the land of Israel is God's promises, are God's repeated promises, of this land to the descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. No other nation has a counterclaim of any legitimacy. We'll talk more about this, but first I want to put on a track from an album called Eretz Hatzvi. Its subtitle is Mishirei Artzenu Hakadosha, from the songs of our holy land. This track is a little bit on the long side. It's called Havtachat Haaretz, the promise of the land, and basically is the musical version of most of what I have just said. הבית נא השמיים וספור הכוכבים ויומר לו כה יהיה זרעך אני השם אשר הוצאתיך לתת לך את הארץ לתת לך לרשתה הארץ לך את נהנה ולזרעך ופרצת ימה בקדמה וצפון ונגבה ופרצת וילך יצחק גרר וירא אליו ויאמר שכון בארץ אשר בא לך גור בארץ הזאת ואהיה עמך וברכך והקימותי את השבוע אשר אשר נשבעתי לאברהם אביך והנה אנוכי עמך ושיבותיך אל האדמה הזו אל האדמה הזו היחץ יעקב משנתו וירא ויומר אין זה כי בית אלוקי וזה שער השמיים שער השמיים Let's
את כל הארץ. ויאמר השם אליו, זאת הארץ אשר נשבעתי לאברהם, לבית וליעקב, לאמור אזרעך את
We'll be right back. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Toledot. We have been discussing what I could summarize as the Jewish claim to the land of Israel. I would further say to the exclusive claim to the land of Israel, which more than implies that no other claim has any validity. I don't know if we'll get to it. But I would say that people who claim that they have some kind of rights, call it squatters' rights, call it recent time rights, not, this is the way I'm saying it, to possession of the land, perhaps to living in their communities within the land, within a state of Israel, a Jewish state of Israel, with secure borders. But that's another issue. Maybe we'll get to it. I am not challenging, well, I'll tell you what I'm not challenging, but first let me say the point. There were two news items this past week, both of which triggered this whole presentation. I don't have the papers in front of me, so the details might be a little fuzzy. One was a report of a Supreme Court decision agreeing to ban certain advertisements on radio and television that refer to what happened in Gush Katif as expulsion. Evacuation is the official word. The use of the term expulsion was considered a political statement unacceptable to the rules and regulations of government-owned media, and the Supreme Court upheld that you can't call it expulsion. I believe that it is the only proper term to use. And the other example, which I've used in previous weeks, that to me rings the same and belongs in the same discussion, is what happened, or what happens every Friday, a couple of blocks up from the Israel Center, at Paris Square, also known as Freedom for Pollard Square. I'm talking about that massive, dangerous intersection where King George ends, Keren Hayesod begins, Ramban goes off in one direction, Agron goes off in another direction. There's a fountain there, and there is an area where traditionally the Women in Black, a leftist group, have weekly protested the occupation. And they have these signs on the black upraised hand, which says, both in Hebrew and in English, enough of occupation. For many, many, many months, I've been wanting to write my own sign in the same style, agreeing that it should be an end to the occupation, but clarifying that I refer to the occupation of parts of the land of Israel by Arabs. Jews do not occupy, in that negative connotation, any of the land of Israel, because the land belongs to the Jewish people. And therefore, when communities which the Israeli government encouraged to be built and developed were destroyed, and the thousands of Jewish residents in the north part of the Gaza Strip were forcibly removed from their homes, and their homes were destroyed, and their land was given to the local authorities in Gaza, that was an act of expulsion. To call it evacuation is to be political, and I believe dishonest. To call it expulsion is what it was. And it is, to me, a sad thing that our Supreme Court favors the term evacuation and bans the word expulsion. The other news item were two Army reservists, I think, who displayed some kind of poster that they would not participate in removing Jews from their place of residence, and we'll talk about the difference in a moment, and they were put into jail and were thrown out of their combat units, and they were making a political statement. You then have another news item, I said two, but there's a third one, about a growing number of soldiers, mostly reservists, I think, who are announcing their preference not to ever participate in removing Jews from their homes. And this has met with a reaction on the part of the government, and on the part of many people, I will say, you know, of a leftist leaning, that this is sowing discontent and discord and lack of discipline in the army by making a political statement. And there, in my opinion, lies a very crucial term, political statement. I believe, call me naive or call me whatever you want, I believe with all my heart that a condemnation of Israel's destruction of the Jewish communities and the displacement of the Jews who live there in Gaza that fateful summer was an obscene, immoral act, And I believe that I am not making a political statement, but I am reacting with moral indignation to what was done. Armies have a concept of conscientious objector, not for political reasons, but for reasons of conscience. And I believe that you trivialize this issue if you don't see it as a matter of conscience. I use the analogy, if an officer were to tell a soldier to catch this Arab kid who threw rocks at soldiers and chop off his arm, the soldier would be right for refusing to do that. I believe that more serious damage was done to the body of the Israel people when more than our arms were chopped off, when these communities were destroyed and that land was given away. So, yes, there's a difference. One is an immoral act recognized as immoral by the army, and the other is a government-sanctioned behavior, at least the government at that time. I accept that there's a difference there, but I believe that the immorality and obscenity of what would be done is more similar. Something I should have made clear at the beginning of the show, maybe I should make it clear at the beginning of every show. I speak for myself. I believe that a lot of what I say is very compatible to Israel National Radio, originally Arut Sheva, on the airwaves and then internet, and now continuing on internet, has been carrying Torah Tidbits audio for approximately 12 years, and much of the show is Parshat HaShavua and Torah-oriented. Occasionally, like right now, I get into a little different waters, which I believe came from the Parshiot of Lech Lecha Vayerecha Yisara Toledot, and I believe that I should not stay away from these kind of issues. I know this will ruffle some feathers, probably not any feathers at Israel National Radio. The show was also carried on OU Radio. I know that there are people who will agree with what I'm saying, and there are others whose feathers I will ruffle. The show is also broadcast, and I hope it continues, by Radio Shalom in Montreal, Canada, on 1650 AM on the dial on Friday. I appreciate the fact that they broadcast many of the Arut Sheva shows, many of the Israel National Radio shows, and I hope that this does not ruffle too many feathers. It is not the policy of the OU. I am not a spokesman of the OU. I'm not allowed to be a spokesman for the OU. I am speaking for myself, and this has been the tone of Torah Tidbits in hard copy, electronic copy, audio, all of these years, not just the 12 years as Torah Tidbits audio, but almost 18 years of Torah Tidbits in general. Once in a while I get called to task. Depends on who's listening and depends on who wants to react. So that's my caveat, that's my waiver. I am not presenting this as any kind of official policy of OU Israel, of the Israel Center, of OU back in the States. I, myself, Phil Chernofsky, am saying these things from my heart, and I hope from my mind as well. And if it will stimulate discussion at the Shabbos table or elsewhere, then that's the purpose of Torah Tidbits audio and of Torah Tidbits in general. Let me also say the following. There are people who would agree to the concept, to the theory of what I am saying, and would argue that in the reality of today, in the reality of Israel's position among the family of nations, its relationship to the United States, the economic pressure it's under, it is not a practical thing to act on the theory that I am suggesting. It is not a popular thing to reject any claim by Arabs, whether they call themselves Palestinians or not. And I mistakenly use the term Palestinians. I know some real Palestinians. Those are people who were born in Israel before 1948, when the country was called Palestine. And I'm talking about Jews that I know who were born then. They have a claim to the term Palestinian, just like anyone else does, who was born in Palestine. But the let's leave that aside. If a person, a Jew, were to argue, yes, of course I believe that God gave this land to the Jewish people, and yes, I believe that we have the exclusive claim, but in the reality of our time, we have to do X, Y, and Z, I would say I might disagree with him, and I could argue, but we're still, as the expression goes, on the same page as far as what it says in the Torah and what that means. I'll argue, but I won't delegitimize the person's position. When a fellow Jew will say, end the occupation of Arab lands and get out of Gilo and get out of Ramat Eshkol and get out of Efrat and get out of Male Adumim, get out of any part of Eretz Yisrael, that's more than a disagreement. And that's what I'm talking about. I am lamenting fellow Jews who either don't open up a Torah, a Chumash, or don't know how to read it, or read it and don't believe it, or believe it but don't internalize it. I believe if a person believes Bereshit bara Elokim, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, if that's part of Torah and you believe that, then I'll ask, do you also believe that God took the Jewish people out of the land of Egypt? Do you also believe that the Jews stood at the foot of Mount Sinai and received the Torah from God? Do you believe that God commanded the Jewish people to observe the Shabbat and to keep kosher? And do you believe all the other parts of the Torah? Then you have to believe, you should believe, when the Torah says, God said to Avraham, this land is yours and for your descendants forever, ad olam. It has to mean something. And when that is further defined as through Yitzchak, and Yitzchak gave it to Yaakov, and Yaakov to his children throughout the generations, then this is something in the Torah, and if the Torah is the word of God, and if the Torah is truth, as in Torat Emet, then that's got to be the starting point of how we approach any situation. We should not bypass that. We should not be embarrassed to bring it up in public, because the Arabs are fabricating lies to delegitimize Jewish presence in the land, and we have to make clear, unequivocal statements based on the foundation of the Jewish people. One more point. We have not kept our deal all the time with God. We were not given this land with no strings attached. There were strings. The strings were to follow God, not to turn away from Him, to keep His Torah, to remain faithful to Him. But not, if you don't, I will take the land away from you and give it to somebody else. Not, if you don't keep the Torah, I will legitimize the claims of others. No. If you don't stay faithful to God, you will be exiled, the land will vomit you out until you come back, until you are brought back, until you return, both spiritually and physically, to this land. But even in the darkest period of exile, this land belongs to the Jewish people and only to the Jewish people. Let's have now a Shabbat mood-setting melody and song for your enjoyment and to calm down a little. And then we'll wrap it up.
Good Shabbos, good Shabbos. Good Shabbos, good Shabbos, good Shabbos. Hey, good Shabbos, this is Shabbos. Good Shabbos, good Shabbos. Hey, lechunera neno. Ela shen norio kanetzon yishenu anekad mofona Boim shona akot bedai ha'ayma hayam daye leivo heim
This is going to sound like a strained attempt at connecting a song with what we were talking about. It isn't. The song wasn't what we were talking about. The song was about Shabbat. Specifically, if it was Shlomo Karlbach's introduction and conclusion to the first paragraph, the first chapter of Tehillim that we start Kabbalat Shabbat with, before Lechu Neranana, he said Good Shabbos, and referred to Heilige Shabbos and Zisa Shabbos. I don't know if I ever paid attention to that before, but it's a very, very beautiful and simple idea. Shabbat is holy, and Shabbat is sweet. Let me modify that. Shabbat should be holy, and Shabbat should be sweet. It is a partnership between God and the people of Israel to keep the Shabbat, but it is up to us to make our Shabbat holy and to make our Shabbat sweet. And having a Shabbat that's only holy is missing something. Only sweet without the holiness is missing something also. What's the connection? Again, I say, no connection. I'm not apologizing. I wanted to get that Shabbat mood. But when we're talking about Eretz Yisrael and we're talking about Shabbat, we're talking about two sides of a very significant coin. That coin is Kedusha, sanctity. Eretz Yisrael represents the sanctity of place. Shabbat represents the sanctity of time. We live or should be living with both. On that note, I will wish you a Shabbat Shalom from Yerushalayim, from Eretz Yisrael, Chodesh Tov, Lehishtamea.